Hello and welcome to this Lancet Global Health podcast. I'm Nina Putness and today I'm recording this special episode from Eswatini in southern Africa, where I am talking to two experts about the issue of snake bite. This is a topic of a comment published in the Lancet Global Health today to go alongside the launch of a very important WHO strategy on this topic, also released today, the 23rd of May 2019 at the World Health Assembly in Geneva. Snakebite is a topic that is perhaps too little discussed in global health. It has only recently been added to the WHO list of neglected tropical diseases, and this additional focus has been anxiously awaited by many people that deal with and understand the devastating impact of snakebite on individuals, including often children, their families and communities, often in the poorest communities in the world. Today I am talking about snakebite from two different but equally important angles. One from the global expertise at the WHO and one from the similarly important expertise of a community movement to prevent and manage snakebite right here in Eswatini. Our first guest is Dr. Bernadette Abela-Ridder, team leader at the Department of the Control of Neglected Tropical Diseases at the WHO. This department leads the work globally on NTDs that have a human-animal interface. Bernadette is also a co-author of our comment in the Lancet Global Health on this topic. Our second guest today is Tia Lichka-Kern, founder of the Eswatini Anti-Venom Foundation, a grassroots organisation seeking to prevent, educate and improve care for snakebite across the country. She was born here in Eswatini and volunteers her spare time to leading this initiative. This fantastic work has been recognised internationally and she sits on the WHO Working Group on Snakebite and Venoming. Bernadette, Tia, welcome to both of you and thank you so much for joining me here today.
It is a pleasure. Thank you, Nina.
Thank you, Nina, for inviting me.
In your comment, Dr. Abela-Ridder, you and your co-authors and colleagues of the WHO talk of the massive impact of snakebite, perhaps surprising to some of our listeners, with an estimated mortality of up to 138,000 people per year, and really importantly, a huge impact on long-term disability and trauma. You state this as potentially 400,000 a year. These are significant numbers. Could you explain a little about the background to this? Why have we heard so little about snakebite over the years?
We have heard so little about snakebite and venoming in the recent past is because this condition doesn't affect people like you and me in privileged situations. This disease actually affects the poorest of the poor, the ones that don't have a political voice, the people who are far away from comms. Snakebite is not a pandemic, so it doesn't really reach the headlines. So snakebite and venoming was therefore included in the neglected tropical disease list.
Well, the tide is now turning, and as you of course well know, the World Health Organization is releasing an exciting document today, the Snakebite and Venoming Strategy for Prevention and Control. What do you see now as the future for snakebite and for people affected by this globally?
We hope to build the attention to a rather big problem that there's very little awareness about. In fact, Kofi Annan used to say, this is a health emergency that no one has ever heard about. So with this document, with this work that we have started, we hope to increase the investment, both domestic and from development partners, to change the plight of people affected by snakebite and venoming. In fact, we've just heard that Wellcome Trust will be investing in new research to improve the antivenoms on the market, but also to create new antivenoms that will be safer, more effective. But these are long-term developments. This strategy is a multi-pronged and will need a multi-partner approach. The main thing is that it sets the countries at the center. It focuses on priorities and outcomes and impact. We won't be able to start in every endemic country at one go, but we will look at a phased approach. The strategy also aligns with WHO's general program of work and fits right into the Sustainable Development Goals. It's really a clear plan of action to reduce snake bites and through that improve the health systems in the countries. One of the biggest areas to improve within WHO is universal health coverage, and snakebite and venoming will also contribute to this. We need countries to engage to include snakebite within the universal health coverage packages that will be based on people-centered primary healthcare. We hope with the strategy to reduce the burden of snake bite, both deaths and disabilities, by 50% by the time we reach 2030. So there are four pillars of the strategy. One looks at engaging and empowering communities to prevent venomous snake bites in the first place, and also to empower communities to know what to do if they are bitten by a venomous snake. It looks into increased training of healthcare professionals to provide better treatment. And this is a transversal capacity that can be used for other conditions. We are looking to also accelerate the development of antivenoms and, crucially, building a sustainable market for safe and effective treatments. And we will need a more reliable system of supply and demand, especially in sub-Saharan Africa and Asia, where antivenom production has stagnated or in many cases has collapsed altogether. So there are a multi-pronged approach to this, and we look to work not only with the private but also with the public sector to improve this condition.
Thank you, Bernadette. Could you also tell us a little bit more about the other side of snake bite management, which is, of course, the circumstances in which the bite occur and prevention of those circumstances?
There is still a lot that can be done with regard to prevention. It's a conflict situation when a snake meets a human. It is probably in search of food itself, rodents, for example, and the human being is also in the same place at the same time, and that's when the conflict occurs. Normally, snakes will not attack spontaneously. So there's a lot that can be done with regard to prevention, looking at how to avoid the bite in the first place. Even simple things like wearing shoes could prevent a venomous snake bite from its consequences. Can you imagine going to bed where the night before you might have been bitten by a snake, or to the toilet, or walking to the fields? Post-traumatic syndrome is one of the major outcomes of being bitten by a venomous snake, and is often not catered for within the health system. So in addition to taking care of the physical disabilities and the management of patients, one should be thinking, and countries should be including in their universal health coverage, an option for mental care. So that these patients then can get over the trauma of the snake bite and also adapt to their new condition.
The, as you say, multi-pronged approach is clearly very important. You mentioned the relevance of engaging countries, and bearing in mind that the majority of snake bite morbidity or mortality is in lower middle-income countries, such as here in Eswatini. What do you think is the role of these countries' governments? What role do they need to play in managing the issues around snake bite, especially when there are so many competing important priorities for these countries?
So countries have signed up to the principles of universal health coverage, and we need commitment to include snake bite within the strengthening of their health systems, and also focusing on leaving no one behind. We need the countries to acknowledge the extent of the problem and identify the areas where most risk is present, and that countries then take on the strategy and adapt it to their own context. They will also need to recognize, and I think they do already, that building the capacity for snake bite and venoming strengthens health systems, not only through training of clinicians, but through improved logistics where other NTD medicines or other medicines or vaccines can be transported from the capital to where these conditions are taking place. There are great opportunities also for integration within other programs. Let's look at, for example, malaria. Using bed nets will also prevent bites from venomous snakes. So there are other opportunities that are out there that we should also consider. As I mentioned earlier, NTDs occur in the poorest of societies. They cause catastrophic out-of-pocket expenses, loss of work, and whole families fall into deeper poverty. So acknowledging NTDs and snake bite will also contribute to economic and economic development.
Listeners may well be surprised to hear, however, that it's not only a question around health infrastructure or countries and universal health coverage or funding even, but that actually a vital core management of the dangerous snake bites, that is, antivenom, is also lacking. You mentioned this before. Could you elaborate on this issue and how this has come about?
The different venomous snakes each have specific antivenoms. So you can't treat with one antivenom for all the global snake bites that occur. We need specific antivenoms for mambas, for cobras, for puffadders. And so this is a little bit more complicated within the manufacturing lines. Also, manufacturing relies on old technologies where horses or other mammals are injected with the antivenom and the antibodies are then harvested from the horse and used as a medicine. There's still a lot of space for improving the purity, the effectiveness of these products, the safety of these products. There's also a need for assuring the market, because this is a perishable product. The manufacturers need to be assured of uptake of their antivenoms. And so WHO is also looking into stockpiling of antivenoms so that countries have easier access to safe and effective antivenoms, but also to appropriate antivenoms while the market is being assured. This will also require an improvement in the capacity of regulation within countries so that countries are better equipped to procure the appropriate antivenoms, but also looking at the most appropriate and optimal pricing. What we need now are multivalent antivenoms that are regionally designed to cater for more than one venomous snake and to help shape the market so that we have consistent availability and also assure the safe and effective products. In the future, as research starts to increase, we would like to see antivenoms that are fit for purpose, that can be delivered at the sites where snake bite is occurring most frequently.
Of course, as you say, governments clearly play a key role in this, but as also mentioned in your comment, communities are also key. Tia, you've been working with communities in Eswatini for a long time now. Could you tell us a little bit about your experiences and how snake bite really impacts the people living here?
The problem of snake bite is very serious, and it is a multifaceted problem. It is a problem that we need to approach and address and try and resolve from all angles. So it starts with community education to try and prevent snake bite. Obviously, if there are fewer cases in hospital, it's going to make everybody's life easier. Then we need to focus on correctly applying the correct first aid. This is very important because the outcome of snake bite is very often determined by the initial reaction to the snake bite. So we need to get rid of all the beliefs and the home remedies to try and improve the outcome for the snake bite victim. Then there are other aspects we need to consider. Very often, or the majority of the snake bite victims live in very rural and remote areas. For them to try and get to public transport can sometimes take 2.5 hours walking. So we need to try and reduce time from bite to treatment. So this is a vital part of solving the problem worldwide, I think. And then just as important is the primary caregivers must be empowered to actually deal with the problem effectively so that we have a viable victim when he arrives at a medical facility.
Thank you for sharing those strategies and some of those I know that you've implemented here in Eswatini. It would be really great to hear a little bit more perhaps about the impacts that you see also about snake bite and about the gaps in snake bite care or about the different experiences you've had of trying to manage those impacts to the family and to the community as well as to the individual.
Snake bite is debilitating. The majority of the snake bites we experience are cytotoxic. So these are bites that cause severe necrosis, often leading to amputations. This financial impact is tremendous. A man who has been a subsistence farmer looking after his family gets bitten, loses a leg, and his life is then that of poverty. He becomes a pauper, he becomes a beggar, and he loses his standing in that community. So this is an absolute life-changing, altering effect on the people. And these people are the poorest of the poor. These people have nothing. The impact is devastating. Besides the financial aspect of spending 3 months in hospital, the trauma, the cost, they then go home, they've taken out loans to try and pay for the hospital bill, They are destitute, absolutely destitute.
Given the now global movement towards managing snake bite, what would you really like to see change on the ground here in Eswatini, perhaps over the following year or 2 years or 5 years or maybe even 10?
What we need to do, first of all, is create awareness. People need to understand that there is a major problem with snake bite. The majority of the people aren't even aware there is a problem. So every 4 minutes, somebody dies from snake bite. And when you say this to somebody, their eyes go wide and they've got no idea. So we need to create awareness. We would want a lot of emphasis placed on community education. Let's teach these people how to prevent snake bite. We need a effective and affordable and safe antivenom, preferably empower the first responders so that they know how to deal with snake bite as well.
If you could change maybe just one thing about snake bite prevention and management, about snake bite care globally or in country, what would that be and how can we make that happen?
First and foremost, we need to empower the clinicians who have to deal with snake bite. Currently, the university modules don't really cover snake bite in detail. So we need to try and improve that knowledge. Every doctor who is going to work with snake bite should have the knowledge on how to deal. It's a medical emergency. You can't procrastinate about the treatment. You need to immediately make a decision, assess the bite, and then take the appropriate action. Probably my second wish would be for a center of excellence where we can have our knowledge in one center, our treatment, our equipment, everything. Our country is so small in Eswatini that we will be able to, once the victim is stabilized, transfer him to the Centre of Excellence where he can receive the best possible care.
Thank you so much for both of you for joining us today and talking about this important topic.
Thank you so much for inviting me. This is such an important subject and it is so close to my heart. It's wonderful to see that the tide is finally turning on snakebite.
Thanks, Nina. We appreciate the time that you've taken to cover this important topic and we hope we are at the cusp of making a big change in many people's lives through better preventing and managing venomous snake bite.